Coming up next, Arnab shares some tips for those crucial job interviews. Hi and welcome to episode 87 of Attention Plus with Arnab Ray. I'm Vikram Mohan and we are recording this on the 7th of June 2020. Also this week on other podcasts from Foursquare, Binjon has animation for grown-ups. We have two movies and two series covering four different types of animation. So check that out. That's really cool. And on WhatsApp Geeks, we review the OnePlus 8 and recommend a really cool game. So now back to the podcast, and we of course have your host with us, Arnab. Hey, Arnab.
Hello. Hello, everyone. So I thought that we would do a small episode. I don't know how small it will be once I start talking about job interview tips. Now, this is I think this with COVID-19, the unemployment rates globally being so high. There'll be a lot of us who will be in the market and who will be giving job interviews. So I thought this might be a good time as any. This is an episode that I've been wanting to do for a while, because as somebody who's been on either side of the table for interviews many, many times, and somebody who actually thinks through the whole process like I do for various things, just wanted to deconstruct some of the, let's say, some of my common experiences that I have experienced both as an interviewee as well as an interviewer and a hiring manager, the kind of things we look for and some of the misconceptions that often sometimes people have of an interview. So one thing again is that most of the tips here are for face-to-face interviews. To be honest, I don't have a lot of experience with Zoom interviews, to use that. I mean, now it's like, it's becoming like Google, but really interviews over. Okay, yes. So today I want to talk about, in the best traditions of BuzzFeed, I am going to listicle this almost.
Listicle this. So I'll have you. Then we should have also a clickbaity headline. You will not believe what number four is.
Yes.
10 tips you will not believe what number four is.
And neither do I believe. Anyway, so without further ado, let's get started. So the basic principle that and perhaps this is the most important thing. So if you stop listening to the podcast after 5 minutes, this is perhaps what you should leave with, is that in an interview, and again, I had this misconception for many years, is that, you're basically evaluated on your knowledge. And that's not true. You're not evaluated on your knowledge. It's just impossible in half an hour or an hour for anybody to evaluate your knowledge. So the fact that you're being called there is based on a certain evaluation of your knowledge based on your CV. Now, of course, if asking a few basic questions, there seems to be a huge dissonance between what you've claimed on your CV and what you appear to be, then of course that's goodbye for you. But your knowledge, again, it's more a necessary than a sufficient condition. So it's partially about your knowledge, but that's not the main thing. And this is important, because sometimes we feel, why didn't I get the job? I answered all the questions correctly, or I'm smarter than this guy and that guy got the job and I didn't get the job. So there are all these things that go through our mind. And for those of you who have read Yatrik, this was one of the questions that, when initially Anushtup meets this guy, he says that the three things that he gets to see are, you go to give a job, your dream job, and you don't get the job. So wouldn't you want to know what exactly was the reason why you didn't get the job? So this is a question that all of us have, and very, very, very rarely do any of us get closure on this. So we never get to find out what the reason was for getting a job, or for mostly for not getting a job. So what really happens, whether consciously or subconsciously, is that the person who's interviewing you is seeing whether you're somebody they can work with. That's different than just your pure knowledge. Unless you're somebody who's just so good at what he does that it doesn't matter whether they can work with you or not. It's like, if you're like a Sachin Tendulkar, then, in a way, it doesn't matter you know, how your interview is. They've already decided to hire you in a way. But for the Manoj Tiwaris of the world, which are most of us, who do have some ability, but in taking his example as somebody I feel who kind of underperformed because some of his non-playing things is not directly related to his statistics, which were okay at some point of time. So he definitely could have had a much more successful career, perhaps not internationally, but as an IPL star, definitely. So since most of us are Manoj Tiwaris with some strengths and some weaknesses, we are not an automatic shoe-in the moment we walk into a room. So really what the person or the interview panel is actually looking at is would you fit into the team? Are you a person that they can work with? And of course, what the position is. Oh, by the way, something I forgot to say. So everything I'm saying over here is kind of scope to technical interviews. So therefore, technical roles. I don't think that managerial roles are vastly different. But since my experience is primarily hiring engineers and being an engineer myself, this is, you know, the base set from which all of this is gleaned are technical interviews. So that caveat is there. So I don't think that other interviews are radically different on many of the things that I'm going to say. But again, this is a point to note. This might limit the scope somewhat in some respects. So when somebody looks at you, they're basically thinking to themselves, whether they're consciously thinking or whether they're subconsciously thinking is another thing, is would you fit the requirement of this role? Like, what do we really expect from this role? If you're in a junior entry-level position, really, they want to see if you're essentially intellectually curious. That is, are you somebody who is willing to learn? Do you take orders? Like when you say, do you take orders? It's not Ramu mere liye chai leke aao, not that kind of orders. But when somebody talks to you and says, like, for instance, five sentences, are you able to take out the critical sentence instantly and able to react to it? That's what they're looking at. When you say orders, it's not, I want you to do this. When somebody says, I want you to do this, you'll possibly do it if he's your boss. But when the boss doesn't exactly know how to articulate that, are you mature enough to find out, oh, do you mean this? Are you that level? Are you at that level? So that's a junior position. You would have, sometimes even senior people can't do that. But at least as a junior person, this is the bare minimum that people look at. And would you work well as in a team? Are you, and again, you don't have a lot of time. I can't see you actually working in a team, but looking at some of the character traits that make somebody work in a team, people think, yeah, this person will be able to work in a team. One of the things in corporate environment is that people do not want lone wolves. They do not want even a very smart person who cannot work with other people. That person is not just, and even if that person is a super performer, if they cannot work with other people, then whatever gain in productivity you get by hiring the person is more than compensated for by the loss of productivity of everybody else. So that is a fairly standard organizational knowledge that, you know, unless a guy is a team player, or if, again, if the guy is Virat Kohli or Sachin Tendulkar, then of course all bets are off. But not very, very few people are at that level. So do you work as a team? And if you're auditioning for a senior leadership role, and this is again important, is can you take control of an engineering conversation? Like when we're having a conversation, the wrong way of taking conversation is speaking over the person and basically shouting him down, you know, doing an Arnab Goswami. That's obviously is not accepted or desirable in an interview, especially in a job interview. But there are other subtler ways of taking control of a conversation. So are you able to do that? Or are you just somebody who sits on your heels? If you're asked a question, you answer the question. And then if there is uncomfortable silence in the room, you just sit there in that uncomfortable silence. What kind of a person are you? In general, for a technical lead position, people want to see, whether they realize it or not, they want to see somebody who is technologically assertive, but he's willing to listen. Technologically assertive doesn't mean, hey, you know, shut the F up. I know more than you do. That's not what But subtly, when somebody asks a question, are you able to turn the question around to your strength? And I'll come to some of the strategies that I've seen work. I've used them myself, and I've seen them being used on me. And I've thought to myself, oh, that was a neat move. So again, so the first point number one, BuzzFeed style, is do your research when you come in. And again, many people say this, if you look at job boards and monster.com and on the best practices, do your research. But one thing I've seen that they often miss is when they say do your research, people think do the research on the company. But that's actually less important than doing research on the people who are interviewing. Because on the other hand, on the other side, those who are going to interview you, if they have done their due diligence, they have researched you. They have looked at your LinkedIn profile. They have looked through your CV. I do it absolutely for anybody who interviews for me. And if there are companies on that CV that I don't know about, I go and find out what the revenue of that company is, how big that company is, if I haven't heard of that company before. So I have a fairly good idea of you when you walk into the door as to what kind of companies you've worked for. And also another thing is how many years you've stayed at them. How fast you move from one company to another. Are you somebody who stays at a company for a few months and then moves on? Are you a person who stayed at a place for 50? So the point that I'm trying to say is if I'm doing his or her due diligence, they have definitely researched you. So return the favor, research them. Sometimes, you know, just go and ask the person or the HR, or if you're going to a recruiter for the interview panel. I think it's a fair thing to ask for in this day and age, that what your interview panel is going to be. Normally you get it. So once you get your interview panel, and even if they don't give you an interview panel, which I would think would perhaps not be a good thing on the part of the company not to give you an interview panel. But if they don't give you an interview panel, at least research your hiring manager, because ultimately it's his or her decision. So, you know, if they're going to try to game you, you have to return the favor and try to game that person too. So do that. And ultimately, once, and again, this is basic human psychology. Once the hiring manager understands that you have researched that person, then that hiring manager, no matter how impassive he is, there will be a feel good that, hey, this guy knows about me. And you want the hiring manager to be in that good mood. Okay. Some people will say this is oiling, but it isn't. This isn't oiling anybody. This is how legitimately some people can get ahead and some people can't. This is one of the reasons is even if you're not actually interested in that person, this is an interview in that other person. Second thing is, you know, your appearance is important. And when I say appearance is important, the first thing is you should arrive early to your interview, not like 3 hours before the interview. Even if you arrive 3 hours before the interview, that's fine. Don't show up and knock the door and sit in the lounge for 3 hours. So go somewhere else. But in any ways, try to arrive 15 to 30 minutes earlier and check in the front desk. And this is important because once you get in, go to the restroom, comb your hair, whatever you need to do, look fresh. And you might have taken a long train to get there. Okay, you might have driven a long distance to get there. So don't just park and run into this. This is not you getting a Starbucks coffee. Okay, so this is your reset. You should reset emotionally as well as physically before you go into the interview room. Because the thing is, no matter what we are told about appearances and stuff, the fact is that when you walk in, it's a question of attention to detail. So, you know, have your shirt tucked in and all of these things. This is especially true, of course, if you're in a managerial position, but even if you're in a hardcore individual contributor role, these things do matter, not for anything else. You know, it's not that you will be in front of the customers, you'll possibly be tucked up in some cube or working at home. That people know you're not somebody who is attentive to detail. And that is not a strike that you want walking into your room where first impressions are so important. Point number three.
I had a comment to make there, though. And as somebody who's been, in fact, I've been taking a lot of interviews in the last 4 months for my firm. And as understandably, most of them have been on video. So the point, Arnab, you made about, you know, looking good, dressing up, that is even more important. People kind of think, okay, this is, since it's a video interview, you know, it doesn't matter. But it does. In fact, it matters even more because your personality is even more difficult to come through in a video interview. So you'll have to put in extra effort. I would say, you know, not just that you dress up well and, you know, you make yourself presentable, but also ensure that your environment, the room wherever you're going to take your interview in your home, prepare it well. You know, don't, let's say, have an ugly towel in the on your bed lying behind you like it is now.
Or a poster of Disha Patani behind you or something. Because ultimately, you have to
understand. That might work in your favor, though. You never know.
Yes. But anyways, the fact is, you're very right. This is your home, right? So it's not set up as a corporate environment.
Exactly. And for all you know, this might be a place going forward where you will continue to work for at least the foreseeable future. So even things like, you know, people are not cognizant about the lighting. So in so many interviews, I've had a person with the light behind them and it's like a halo. I don't get to see their face. So I ensure that the light is facing you. And please, maybe prop up your laptop and ensure that it's your camera is on your face level. Nobody wants to look up your nose. So
yes, these are very important things. I think what Vikram is saying, especially for video interviews, because you're absolutely right. We're not accustomed also to getting an idea of somebody over video for the first time. In general, we are at least Vikram and I are at a generation where we used to meet people.
Absolutely.
In real life. And I think after COVID, this might be different. We might come up, you know, the culture might change in terms of basic human interactions. But in order for us to form first impressions, it's very important for us to see the person in 3D. And what Vikram said is very important. Again, it's not so much anything else other than the perception that you are giving to your hiring manager as to how you think things through. If there's something which is very important for you, of course, everybody wants to see that working for this company or working for me is important to you. So how much attention to detail did you put in to this endeavor? That's really what people are judging. It's not really the poster behind you or, you know, how professionally you're lit. That is not the primary thing. The primary thing is, did you think this through? Or did you just rush in, log in, and then, you know, start talking? That's important. And again, I would say the more senior you are, the expectations are more. So sometimes for an entry-level position, you can dismiss something as, okay, come on, this guy is so young, he doesn't. But, you know, if you're a mid-career professional and you can't get these things right within the first 5 seconds of your interview, then you're starting with at least 2 demerit points. The third point is perhaps, the third point is, if you're asked a technical question, for me, this is an interview technique that I have. I usually ask a fairly difficult technical question whose answer I don't expect the candidate to know or the candidate to give a perfect. Sometimes the candidate will give the perfect answer, which basically means that I lost my chance as a hiring manager because that was not the intent. The intent wasn't to get a cash hit on his memory, but to get a cash miss. You know, at any point of time, if you, as a technical hiring manager who's supposed to know what he or she is doing, if you should, I mean, it's obvious. I mean, what I usually do in a technical thing is I ask that person, so what, you know, even in security, which is my specialization, there are lots of subdomains. So, you know, some people are in security operations, some people do identity access management, you know, somebody in the IoT space essentially doing cryptography. So I'll say, okay, fine. Now, based on what that person says, their main focus is, I ask a pretty tough question. in that respect. It's not even that I know the full answer myself. I'm not that good on everything. So, but I know 5 minutes. I can talk 5 minutes about it. After that, I don't know. Now, if I find that I've hit that guy's perfect sweet spot and the guy's like Dhoni'd me for six, then in a way, I have lost that delivery. But usually that doesn't happen. Then that opens up the real interview. So when I have a cash miss, either a full 100% cash miss or a 50%, you know, I know little bit, I don't know most of it. What I and a lot of hiring managers are trying to see is how you think on your feet technically. That's the actual reason why that question was asked. That's why if you know the answer 100%, it didn't throw any light on what I was actually trying to shine light on. So I have seen people react in different ways. Some people just get flustered. They just get flustered by that question. And flustering it could be non-verbal being flustered. And for somebody, it could be just verbally, verbally expressing the fact that they're flustered. That's usually, for me, that's usually pretty much the end of the interview for me at that point of time. Now, there are some people who just straight up say, I don't know the answer. Now, given that I asked a question in the specific subdomain that that person claims to be an expert in, this is sometimes a problem. If the person directly says, no, I don't know the answer to the question, and especially if this person is a senior person, if it's a person who's an entry-level person, then normally they haven't worked in something, then basically, ask me any question in security. It could be very well that you don't know that thing very well. So that is a fair answer. Then I'll ask that person something else. So usually I don't, but what's worse than saying I don't know is trying to hem and haw and trying to like basically throw dung at the interviewer, hoping that something hits. And I have seen people do that. Now, this is by itself not a bad strategy, but you have to do it in a way that you have to actively listen. Now, when I'm an interviewer, and I realize that the person doesn't know the answer, I start throwing different kinds of hints, different kind of cues. Sometimes I give the answer myself, couched in something else. And then I see whether that person is perceptive enough to realize that I gave the answer or that I basically pointed him to the... So when I'm talking, if that person is totally flustered, then that person isn't actually listening to me at that point of time. That person is thinking, oh my God, I am not going to get this job. Now, if the person is not flustered and the person's listening to me and the person has that technical aptitude to pick up. So the simile is like, so whenever we were giving exams in school, we couldn't cheat and, we tried to cheat, but working on a physics problem, I look to the smart guy and say, kya cha bolna? So I'm trying to tell him, what should I do? And, if he tells me the answer, that's not going to help me because I just can't put down the answer, right? I have to show how I did it. So he just turns around and says, Joule's law. And then I say, okay, all right. I get it now. I'm at that level where once you tell me that part, I can solve the rest. But you need to tell me that I'm not getting or where I'm getting stuck. So he is smart enough to realize that I have gone five steps in and I've hit the part which is the difficult part. And all he needs to tell me is to tell me that small thing. So that technical interaction, because remember, when somebody is working in a company, nobody's going to sit and say, no, I'm not going to help you in anything. Just solve the goddamn problem. But nobody else is going to come and solve the problem for you, but you can always get help from your seniors or your manager or somebody who's an individual contributor. But then that person expects that if I tell you some little bit, you'll be able to take it forward, that you have that sufficient knowledge to understand and apply it. So that's exactly what I'm trying to see in these interviews, is whether you have that skill. Whether you can identify a solution, whether you can, and sometimes some very, very good candidates, they will then start asking you questions, trying to pivot you to what that person knows. So maybe that person doesn't know exactly that, but they know something related. So they're kind of taking you to their comfort spot. And I, as an interviewer, very much appreciate that, because that shows me two things. First of all, that you're aware that you don't know this. You're aware that you can ask me questions. You're listening to my questions. You have evaluated the fact that I am perfectly comfortable with that. So that shows that you're able to read up the person opposite to you. And plus, you are taking control over the interview, which tells me a lot of good things about you. All of this is very positive. And even at the end, if you haven't been able to answer the question, you have very, very well impressed me by that time. Because again, the answer to the question is not important at all. And this is something so many interviewees get hung up on. Did I get the right answer? Did I give the wrong answer? That was not the thing. And sometimes, why didn't I get the job even though I gave the right answer? You perhaps gave the right answer finally, but the path you went along the way to get to that right answer might not have been what the hiring manager might have left the hiring manager cold, let's say. So this is a very, very important thing. And again, this is a little bit of a dance. And this is really what an interview, technical interview, is for. It's for this dance. It's to see how you work. It's not just to see how much you know. You know, there's always Google, there's always Stack Exchange. It's not that if you don't know anything, you don't know where to go. You can always ask. But if you ask someone, do you have to keep on asking somebody repeatedly? Or are you smart enough, if given the right input, you can go then and solve the problem on your own? Point number four. If you're trying to change your career track, often we in cybersecurity, we get this. We get a lot of people coming from, say, software engineering, who want to, you know, don't have a cyber background, but they want to get into cybersecurity. And any other people will, you know, data science. A lot of people don't have a data science background, but because a lot of jobs and it's supposedly, you know, hot now, everybody wants to get into data science, which is perfectly fine. But if you come to your interview, if you come to a hiring manager and say, I'm interested in XYZ, be prepared for the next question, which says, what courses have you taken or what have you done? And if your answer is, haven't done anything, in this day and age when you can get so many online certificates, when you can just take a Udemy course, again, nobody's asking you to, you know, again, somebody might ask, you know, again, depending on the company or depending on the expectations, they might say, you know, what have you done on GitHub? Show me your GitHub repo. Oh, no. You know, but whatever the level is, you have to show something that you have done. You can't say, you know, I'm interested in it ideally, just like I'm kind of interested in watching movies in Netflix. It's not that kind of an interest that I'm looking for. Okay, I'm not looking for interest in the abstract. Even that then sounds that you're basically saying interested because the job position is in that. Next day, you'll go to somewhere else and say, I'm interested in something else. So if you're interested in something else, if you want to take that route, again, don't take that route if you're not specifically, and you wouldn't possibly even get to that state then. So if you're going to come with, I'm interested, and I was a software engineer, I'm interested in cybersecurity, you know, people sometimes say, oh, I was doing this project, there was a lot of cybersecurity in it, and I got interested in it. But then I'll say, okay, that's a good story, but can you tell me, what did you do? I was working on something and I got interested in cybersecurity, I got an interest in data science, and the very next thing I did was apply for a role that asks for it. Isn't a particularly good story. There needs to be something in the middle where you did that, you found something interesting, you read about it, you trained yourself, you got something, and then you decided. That middle part is a testament to the seriousness of your interest. Okay. Number five. Is that old chestnut? Why do you want to work for this company? Now, if you have a personal story, that's the best. Okay, so let's say you're going to work for a company that does diabetes management. And you say, look, I'm a diabetic myself. And that's why I want to join your company, because, you know, this forms a large part of my life. And that's, you know, done. Story done. There's nobody needs to listen to another sentence. That's a totally convincing story. But if you have a very generic beauty contest type answer, and especially if the guy opposite to you is a person with an engineering background, don't give that. Don't give, I want to make the world a better place kind of stuff. You know, the waste of time. Okay. If that question is asked, then try to focus, and you don't have any personal story. I'm not saying that it has to be totally true, but you should have, I'm being facetious here, but if, you know, it might not be the reason why you're applying for the job. It just because you're diabetic doesn't mean that you go apply for you know, in every insulin company, but it just that it happens to be, so you can use that. That's totally cool. But if you don't have a generic answer on the company, go for the technology. Okay, say there's something specific, and that's why you need to do, you know, your technical homework. Is this is something that I find interesting. So if you are, you know, if you're interviewing for a company which, you know, for cloud security, for instance, don't say I'm just interested in cloud security, you know, I really want to go into cloud security. Don't say that. Focus on a particular technology. Okay, say, okay, I am interested in, let's say, containers. I'm interested in managed container services. But something very specific that you know that company uses. And I want to work on it. And I have done some of these things, but I want to, you have aced that question already. Okay, so that's the way to ace that question. Sixth point is, do not show emotion. Okay, one of the things that, you know, James Bond never does is he never lets them see him bleed. James Bond never bleeds. That's the thing, is do not show any emotion. Put on your poker face in an interview. Okay. If you do badly, if you totally screw up an answer, or you realize looking at the room that this was not what they wanted, don't let it show on your face. The best example, the best story that I have on this is something which Salman Khan was once a judge in Dance India Dance. This was a time when I used to follow that program religiously. And there was this performer who was doing a dance on a thali. And the one of the fundamental tenets of that thali dance is your foot is not supposed to touch the ground. Now, while she was performing, foot touched the ground. And then, of course, she managed it, but her foot touched the ground. So when they were coming for the, like, they asked the judges and everything, and all the judges say, no, you know, one judge said, you touched the foot. That was not a good thing. And then it came to Salman Khan. And normally you wouldn't expect a lot of insight into the world from Salman Khan. But what Salman Khan said was great. And that is not only true for Dance India Dance, but it's true for interviews. He said, you see, and he addressed the contestant, the only way I knew that you had touched the ground wasn't I was not watching your feet. When somebody dances, nobody, unless they are your dance instructors, will watch your feet. People will watch your face. That's exactly what people watch. I realized that you had touched the ground because I saw your face. Your face showed it. Then I looked and saw your foot was touching the ground. You gave it away. If you didn't give it away, and he said, look at me, you know, I screw up all the time on my shows. I have no idea of how to dance. I have no idea how to do anything. But as a professional, I will never let it show on my face. Because once I let it show on my face, then that's the problem with me as a performer. Other stuff will happen. You know, you go on a stage, stuff will go wrong. That will always, always happen. And that's so, so true for job interviews also. So it's never going to be that you're going to be 100%, you know, it's going to be 100% acing a job interview. It happens sometimes, but, and if you're smart and perceptive, you will pick up where something you said, you know, especially in an interview panel. This is particularly true in an interview panel where it's not just one person, there are three or four people, and one of them definitely doesn't like you from moment zero. I've been in so many interview panels. It's rarely been a case where I knew once I walked into the room that everybody there had a good impression of me, even though they had never met me. But, you know, maybe that guy wants another candidate. Whatever it is, that's usually the reason. So if you believe that, you know, I'm not being able to get to that person is giving me the cold vibes, and that then shows on your face, then that is a problem. Otherwise, you know, whatever your impression of what's how the interview is going, don't give that back to your interview panel at all. Because again, it's one of the things as a good employee is that a good employee keeps their emotions in control. You know, working at a place is never, it's not a place where it's you know, working is in a way like a relationship, right? There will be stress. It's a pyramid. Not everybody is going to go to get promoted. Not everything you say will be taken as a decision. So how do you react to that? And the professional way to react to that is not to react at all. And especially if you're in a place for a half an hour and an hour for an interview panel and you can't even keep it for that, then that reflects poorly on you. Maybe if you're in a place for a year or 2 years, then maybe something might come out once or twice. But if in half an hour you can't do that, then there's a problem with you as a team player. 7 is take your time. Do not feel the urge to talk at a mile a minute. Okay. Especially if an interviewer, one of the things that at least happens over here is an interviewer walks in and says, "Do you want something?" Okay. Now, most times people say no. Okay. So in general, don't take food. Okay. Because you're going to eat and crumbs are going to get on you, you know, whatever you're wearing. But do use that to take water. First of all, you're taking up time in the interview. And secondly, is many interviewers, when they say, "Do you want something?" they're actually giving you a hint that you need to freshen up, that there is something off about anything, that you look tired or something. So they're basically saying, do you need something is message that maybe you should go and just look at yourself in the mirror once. Okay. And don't feel that, you know, that's just something which people are saying. Some people might just be saying it because they're polite, but many, many hiring managers, you know, they see if that's, you know, the test starts from the first question, which isn't even like a question. But they see the emotional maturity of the guy. Does that person pick up on that? Or that person doesn't pick up on that? So again, everything in an interview is an actual interview question. Even the ones that don't seem to be interview questions. And sometimes whether you get selected or not depends on those questions which aren't even, which you don't even think are questions. Point number 8. Again, do not and never interrupt the interviewer. Never, ever, ever interrupt the interviewer. If the interviewer is asking a question, listen. If you know the answer, don't feel that you have to show off by interrupting the interviewer and, you know, saying, "Oh, I totally understand what you're asking." That first of all, the interviewer, because you interrupted him or her, will then change the interview question. And then say, "Well, no, that's not exactly what I was asking." And now you're in trouble. So don't do that. Let the and this is another question thing that I picked up in quizzes. For those of you who went to quizzes, so many novice quizzers, when the quiz master starts asking the question, they don't let the guy finish and then the answer. And many times quiz masters, because they get pissed, will say, "That was not the question. The question was something else." Okay.
I've been on both sides of that.
Exactly. So, you know, that is a very vital lesson to learn. Do not interrupt the interviewer. If you know the question, don't say, I know this. Don't go like that. Okay. Pretend as if you don't know it. Hear him out. The question might not be what you're thinking it is also, by the way. You might be smart enough to have changed something there, which you are in your happiness that you know this answer. And this is exactly what I studied 5 minutes before coming here. He's asking exactly that question. Maybe you miss the actual thing that he's trying to get. So do not interrupt the interviewer. Do not interrupt the interviewer when he's asking a question. Now, when you start answering, you might find the interviewer immediately interrupts you. The reason why that interviewer is immediately interrupting you is possibly you're going on the wrong path. So don't counter interrupt the interviewer at that point of time. This is not, your interview is not the place to establish your conversational ascendancy. So at this point of time, let the interviewer, whenever the interviewer decides to interrupt, let the interviewer interrupt. You might be pissed by that, But remember, there is a fundamental asymmetry in this conversation. That person has the job and you don't. So be very, very mindful of that. And again, if the interviewer is interrupting, there might be a good reason why the interviewer is interrupting. Listen to what he or she is trying to say at that point of time.
In fact,
number nine. Yes.
This point which is made, it's very important and all the more challenging again in the aforementioned Zoom interviews, right? Because sometimes you think that the other person has done, and honestly, yeah, again, this has happened on both parts where as an interviewer, I'm not really sure if the other person has finished. So you have to read up on body language cues to kind of understand if the person asking you questions is done. And it's okay to pause a second just to ensure that, you know, what you're facing is just not a lag and that they're really done. So exactly. After a couple of questions, you kind of get into the rhythm of it.
Exactly. So once an interviewer is asking a question, don't feel the need to immediately start the moment you think the question has ended. It might not have ended. So give a pause. You know, remember, that person, it's in that person's interest to squeeze as much stuff that the hiring manager can. It is in your interest to squeeze the least amount of stuff that you can. Remember, that is very important. So if that person is giving you two breaths, take those two breaths.
If you're getting interviewed by Vajpayee, for example.
Exactly. And then many people who are like that, they stop, they think, and they, I mean, this could be that the hiring manager himself or herself isn't prepared. They might ask a question and they might think, maybe that's not a good question. Okay, hold on. So let's, or sometimes what can happen is that because you are not being impassive, because you are showing your emotion, that person realizes that you know the answer to this. If that person is actually trying to get a cash miss. So you might have, without knowing, already conveyed the fact that you know the answer. So that's why it's, you know, that the previous point number six is so important. But it's important that you let him finish. And once you're done with your answer, you know, say something which kind of says that, you know, you're done. You know, I think that would be my answer or something. And again, this is not the way we normally talk. But this is not a normal conversation either. So don't, you know, sometimes your hiring manager might be very chummy. And don't fall into that trap. Okay, that's a pretense. There's nothing chummy in an interview. Not at all. So always be on guard.
I had a candidate call me bro just 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, exactly. So bro, boss, you know, don't, again, those are things which I'm not getting into because I feel they're so obvious, but maybe that's something, you know, don't act overtly chummy. Again, the hiring manager might act, you know, might call you bro or might call you boss. And again, there's a fundamental asymmetry here. I would prefer that the hiring manager not use terms like that also, that the hiring manager also recognizes that this is a serious business interaction. And sometimes, again, in this is perhaps a digression, but in many jobs, there is taking you out to lunch and having an interview over lunch. This is a particularly tough thing to do because you might be in a... So usually the non-technical interview is sometimes done over lunch. So maybe the VP will come and take you to lunch. Now, that's definitely a part of the interview. Okay, he's not just taking you out to lunch. So whatever you say at lunch counts. So again, don't fall into the, my interview is over now. The VP is just doing gupshup with me. No, the VP is not doing gupshup with you. The VP is interviewing you. The VP is observing everything at the lunch, you know, from, you know, I don't know what VPs observe, having never been a VP myself. But the thing is, whatever it is they're observing, they are observing. So don't take the fact that you are not in a corporate setting, you're not in an interview room, to let your guard down and start getting into the bro, boss, dude, you know, that kind of conversation. You might very well, after joining, after 2 days, start calling you boss. That's perfectly fine. If the boss is like that, then that's fine. You know, if that's the culture, then that's good. But not on day one, not on day zero. Number nine is when the hiring manager asks you, do you have any questions for me? Please, please never say no. Please never say I have no questions. See, for many people, that is a terminating answer. The fact that you have no questions. So what kind of questions? So many people, their question is, I remember there was a Jughead Jones, for those of you who read Archie, they had this question. There was a Jughead was giving an interview someplace. It was possibly at some restaurant, obviously. And they said, do you have any questions? And Jughead's question was, what are your profit sharing plans and when do I retire? So, so normally that is not the question that you should be asking, even though that might very well be on the top of your head. But don't, in general, I would say, ask about your career path and what's the next level and those things. Again, this might be hypocritical on the part of your hiring manager or your company to think that you wouldn't be thinking these things. For me, I think it's personally, it's okay. Again, as I once said, if the person in my team is not... See, teams get stronger and companies become more productive when the ambition of the company matches the ambition of the employee. If the employee doesn't have any ambition, the employee is not looking to grow, or the employee is just like there to keep a job, till I do something else which is more exciting. And that's not an employee worth having there, at least in my opinion. Unless the employee himself or herself has a plan to grow or has that, and you think that this company is going to grow in that trajectory, only then is it a good fit for that person. And I'll come to this point in point number 10, where I tell you how you should also be interviewing your interview. I'll give you my own personal trick. When somebody asks me this question, the question that I typically ask my hiring manager is, what is your definition of a successful person in this role after 1 year? And I add, you know, feel free to phrase this in positives or negatives in terms of, if somebody does these things, then that person is not a successful person. I find that many times the hiring manager falters on this question. They haven't thought this through, which tells me something about the hiring manager also, that the hiring manager doesn't think in terms of always evaluating an employee. Some people are very forthcoming and very prepared with this answer, and some hiring managers seem to not. So that's a question which I like to answer. I like to ask. Other questions that have impressed me very much was, once I did an interview, we talked about some of the technologies and everything. And so I asked this guy, you know, what, we have 5 minutes left, what question would you like to ask? And this guy asks me a technical question about our company. And I was very impressed by the question, because that was one of the technical issues that in general anybody in this space has. He says, how do you handle this thing? And I was so impressed by that question. I felt, wow, this guy is so smart. You know, that's such an amazing question to ask me. It's the kind of question that would put the hiring manager in a spot, actually. But he was smart enough to either research this. He obviously didn't think of this question beforehand. He thought of this, but he put in that amount of effort to read. It takes quite a bit of effort to even come up with this question, and he's already put that. Either that, or he's super intelligent, and within this last 25 minutes, he figured this out himself. Either way, I am so impressed by that question. Now, from my point, I've never been able to ask such an interesting question to my hiring managers, and that's my failing. But this is very important. Think of what question you're going to ask, and don't phrase it, even if you really want, don't phrase it as in terms of, what am I going to get? You know, when do I get promoted? What's the next step? Don't ask it in your terms. Ask it in terms of, even if you want to know that, you know, ask it in terms of, as I said, what are the parameters for success? Because you're essentially asking the same question. I mean, what is it that I need to do in this job for you to promote me? That's really the question when I ask that question. I mean, but I don't frame it in terms of me. That's the important thing. And for those of hiring managers who are perceptive enough to pick it up, they give me the answer that I want. They give me the answer of, okay, what's the next step in terms of promotion? And you know, some persons, one hiring manager, you know, next level is, you know, he got it. What I was asking, he didn't phrase it like, you know, if you think you get here, you know, so that they get. And some hiring managers, they don't even know how to answer that question. Which brings me to the last point. Evaluate your hiring manager. Many of us are when we go to an interview, because we possibly don't have a job, is that we are willing to settle with whatever we get. And we, you know, I'm not going to talk about salary negotiations and stuff, because there's lots of stuff on the net about that. I'm not talking about salary, but evaluate just like that person is evaluating you, whether they can work with you. You have to evaluate whether you can work with that hiring manager, because, you know, this is a truism, much repeated, but it's absolutely true. Is that you don't work for a company, you work for your manager. So you have to also, and you might think, man, I am desperate. I need this job right now. So even if he looks like somebody I cannot work with, I should take the job. And there might be certain very, very special circumstances in which that is the case. And I'm not going to say you shouldn't at that point of time, but then you should know that despite not liking my hiring manager, I am majboor enough to take this job right now. But in general, don't do that. Even if you don't have another job offer lined up, because remember, when you are going to a company, you are signing up. That goes on to your LinkedIn. That goes to the next job. So if you're thinking, okay, I'll join this place and I'll leave in a few months, trust me, you're going to find it tough to move in 2 or 3 months. Not just if you have to change cities or anything. The next guy, the next person who you're going to work with is going to judge you for this. So do not, and it's, I cannot emphasize this enough, that just because we kind of grow up with this asymmetry in a job interview where you feel that you're the person being evaluated, which you are, doesn't mean that you are also not going to be evaluating the people you're going to work for. So look at the, you know, how the companies, you know, how professional, for instance, they are in terms of, you know, if they cannot, and this is very important, because it's a two-way street. And I'll give you a personal example of so when I was in academia, and I didn't work in a university, I was an adjunct faculty, which is not a tenure track faculty. So at some point of time, around like 7 or 8 years of working in where I was working, I decided to apply for an academic job, a tenure track position. So I got an interview, and it was a fairly decent place, not a great place or anything, but it was a decent place. I went there, I gave my job talk and everything. And then I went and talked to the dean. The dean is really the boss of the boss of professors. And I didn't like the dean at all. I mean, I just felt that the dean was like, the dean basically walked in and said, I want this amount of research, I want this amount of teaching. And it's impossible that, you know, anybody can do all of that. And it's that, not that even that professors, other professors in that department were even doing that level of teaching in. But she just decided, whatever it was from her side. But I realized that this person has no sense of, you know, what is a reasonable expectation from anyone. You know, how can this person be my boss? And maybe that person, when I talked about this with my advisor, my advisor said, you know, that person didn't actually mean this also. It's obvious that person felt obliged to say this. But again, if you are saying something which is patently not true in an interview, and I can realize that right then, I don't even work for that place, then what kind of impression does that leave on me? So, you know, I got the job and I said no to them. And they were shocked, because, you know, an academic interview, it's not, I mean, once you, you know, for those of you who've been doing academic interviews, you know, an academic interview takes place 1 or 2 days and they fly you in there, they stay. So it's an academic interview, takes a lot of money for on their part. So, and they don't interview a lot of people. They'll interview perhaps 1 or 2 or 3 people and they'll hire one because they don't have an infinite budget. And so, you know, when you go to interview at a place, that's a fairly high bar that you've already crossed to be even able to be called for a physical interview. So normally when you have a physical interview and you get an offer, very few people will say no, unless they have another offer. And I didn't have another offer. I was going to work with my company that I was with. So they asked me, but you said you do not have any other offer. That you said, yeah, I don't. But you know, at this point of time, I think I will stay on where I am. I obviously didn't tell them why. Because again, it's unprofessional. Just like your the company that you know you didn't get a job for never tells you why. It's also not my business to tell them why. So I just said, no, I don't think that this was a, you know, this is a right fit at this. And of course, that was a BS answer. Obviously, if it wasn't right fit, why did I even interview for them? Of course, it's a BS answer. And they knew it was BS. Just like the rejection mails you get are, you know, essentially standard template stuff too. So I just gave them the standard template answer. And the real reason was I didn't like the dean. I don't think that I could have worked for that dean. And right decision, wrong decision, whatever it is, I was not comfortable with that. So this is very important. And a lot of people, because, you know, you're joining that place and sometimes there may be many reasons why you want to join. And again, I would always say that if you don't have a job and if you really need the money, yeah, sure. I'm not going to say that point number 10 really matters. At that point, you don't really have a choice. And perhaps when you're a very junior entry level position, maybe it doesn't matter either. But once you are middle level, getting to middle level, your boss is really, really very important in your life for your own peace, for your own stress-free life. It's very important that your boss, again, it's not that you will know anything about anybody in half an hour. Just like they don't know anything about you, you also don't know a lot. But if you achieve a red flag within that time, then you know that there'll be more red flags moving forward. So that's the final thing that I had to say. So 1 to 10, these are the 10 different things that I would advise you. And I normally don't find any much of these in any of the, you know, different kind of listicles and articles on job interviews, because I've read a few of them and I haven't, one or two might be there in different forms, but I haven't seen all of these together. And again, based on my more than I would be comfortable with experience of having appeared for interviews and of having taking interviews, this is what I would summarize as my 10 lessons.
All right. I actually had a, not exactly an interview tip though, but more of a career or job advice for these times. Then this based on an incident, couple of incidents, in fact, which have recently happened. And companies are right now, of course, looking to make amends, right, on for their past hiring mistakes and looking to be more diverse. So this is a very good time for women to be in the job market. So for the guys, I would say just be ready to challenge your beliefs for gender roles, typical gender roles. I personally know people who have given up really good jobs because it would result in, you know, in their words, imbalance, which is the wife earning more or having a more glamorous sounding title. I think that's the stupidest thing you can do at this time.
And okay, that's something which I haven't personally ever experienced, but
I know two people who have, at least in the past year, who have done this. I mean, according to me, that's though officially in one of the cases, that was not the official reason given, but basically that was that.
But that's got nothing to do with the hiring, man. That's like a family thing, right? That person knew that before they went to the interview. I'm not sure I understood.
No, so basically he got the job in one case, but the designation given in that particular company was, let's say, I think his wife is a senior something and a senior manager or something, and his designation would have been a manager. And
not in the same in the same company.
No, in a different company. Totally. I mean, apples and oranges, exactly. But and even if it was the same company, it shouldn't matter.
Again, the scope of this wasn't to be, the scope of this episode was interview tips. It wasn't like, don't be a jerk.
True.
So that again is something else, of course, you know, but again, the scope of this whole thing was the hiring manager and your interaction. And the point about the video interview was actually very pertinent. Again, I haven't done enough in terms of video interviews. I've started to kind of be able to deconstruct what's a good video interview and what's not. I think in general, again, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think eye contact is even more important in a video interview.
Absolutely. And the point you made about, you know, arriving before time, that's even more important for for one of these video interviews, because so often you will need to download some stupid plugin or something. Exactly. And people log in at, let's say, the interviews at 11, and they log in at 11, and you know, they realize that they have to download a Skype plugin or a whatever plugin, and you're late.
So many years ago, there was this HR, and I was interviewing for a role, and the HR, it was a video interview, because this was rather early, I would say, for video interviews in those days. But this was like, instead of doing a phone screening, they wanted to do a video interview, which was fine. But then that person gave me the wrong time. It was a time difference thing. And that person gave me the wrong time. So while it was like still an hour left when the HR says, you're not coming to the interview. And I was like, what? This is... So obviously I didn't get the job, even though it was the HR who screwed up by sending me the wrong time. But you know, when I went into the interview, it was almost like 10 minutes into the interview when I was able to log in. Because I wasn't prepared for the interview. The interview was like 15 minutes after that, as per what the HR had told me. So, you know, they didn't call me back after that. And I knew that they wouldn't call me back, even though it was not my fault. It was because the HR screwed up.
I had a weird incident, though, where I was told it's a face-to-face interview. And here I'm sitting in a meeting room of a really large company. And I'm just waiting and nobody turns up. 10 minutes into it, I just hear a hello. And there's somebody on a video conference. I mean, they had this proper, you know, huge video conference facility. And I have no idea for how long they've been actually watching me, because I was looking down on my phone. Luckily, because I was waiting for somebody to knock at the door and, you know, come through the door. And I didn't pay attention to the video. Anyway, hey, but luckily I got the job. So.
No, that is sometimes, and here's the thing, sometimes even after violating all the 10 rules, you'll still get the job. So that's always going to be there. So I'm pretty sure somebody will write to me saying, you know, I didn't do this and I got the job. Of course, you'll get the job. If they really need you, you'll get the job. But in general, I found out that in a place where supply and demand are well balanced, so, you know, there are candidates to choose from, and the candidate has other jobs to choose from. These 10 things will generally work in your favor. Again, in conclusion, I'll again say that in an interview, you are again evaluated on whether you are a fit into that corporate and team culture. That's the primary thing that people are looking for. No matter, they might not even be aware that is what they're evaluating on, but that's really what's going on, is can we work with you? And that's again another reason why diversity initiatives are so important, because sometimes in this case you will normally gravitate to people who are like you, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's why you need to have, you know, especially you need to have special mandates for diversity to prevent this from happening. So this is important, because this is the way human beings evaluate people, based on their, you know, how similar they are. That's a basic thing. So that means somebody needs to, you know, take that guy to the side and say, well, is that the reason? And, you know, there needs to be another person at the table who is responsible for making sure that part is negated. So this is very important on both sides of the table. Especially if you're, obviously, if you are the hiring manager. This is why it's so important it's so important that, again, I'll again repeat the technical questions. If they ask you to, you know, one of the, you know, just since we are bantering on this, So one of the funniest interview experience that I have was, I was interviewing for a job, and this first of all, this interview wasn't going very well. First of all, and I knew I wasn't getting the job about 10 minutes or 15 minutes into the, it was a phone interview. By the way, I did get the job, but 10, 15 minutes, I realized this wasn't going anywhere. And then this guy asked a question on, so he said, now I'm going to ask you some technical questions. I said, okay, shoot. So then he asked me one of the questions he asked me was, what is the heap? So I immediately knew that he is asking for the heap as in from where malloc allocates memory from. So he's asking me for that, the dynamic part of memory. But then there's also another heap as in heap sort, which is a specific data structure. So, you know, nodes have a certain relationship between them. So I asked him, what heap? So first he thought I didn't know what a heap was. So he said, don't you know what a heap is? I said, yeah, there are two heaps. So there is this heap, which was not the one that I knew he knew. I knew he didn't know the heap sort heap because he wasn't a computer science guy. So I deliberately first told him the stuff that I know and he doesn't know. Then I told him the stuff that he knows and I know. This was a very, very deliberate move on my part to take control over the interview. And I was basically having fun at that point of time. But you know what? He loved me. I think he liked me because of that. I think that the interview was really going pathetic before I pulled that thing out. And, you know, he kind of appreciated that, you know, that part of me, you know, because I showed him I know something. I showed him that I know a lot on this topic, at least. He's more than him. And I was able to rescue what hadn't been going particularly well. So before that, in terms of the technical questions he asked me, I didn't know all of them. And he was like very brusque. He was like asking me a question, giving me like 1 minute. It was like true false kind of questions and then moving on to the next, which was not typically the way, you know, technical interviews at this level work. They usually give you a problem and they say, okay, how would you, you know, so it was not a question of 1-0, you know, opcode for this. What is this? You know, nobody asks this kind of question. He was asking me that kind of questions at that point of time. So, and you know, that's why, you know, normally if you come to an interview with me, I will never ask you what a heap is. Okay? I will never ask you that. I'll never ask you such a direct question. I'll ask you, you know, I'll give you a problem and I'll say, okay, how would you design this? And okay, if this thing doesn't happen or if this link fails, how would you do this? I would ask you questions like that, which I believe are better questions to ask in an interview because it shows not necessarily how much you know, but how you think. So, so again, it's sometimes important to take control of an interview. It is sometimes, again, this is when you're a senior guy, and sometimes, you know, that comes with risk. You know, if your hiring manager feels you're too dominant, you're too assertive, they might not go for you. But I figured out within that 15 minutes of my interviewing that person might not mind that. He didn't seem to be a guy who, I mean, he seemed to be a guy who liked, you know, he was a, you know, staccato, aggressive guy, but he also liked, you know, people to come back at him. And I realized that within the 15 minutes that he's not, he doesn't like people to say, yes, sir, no, I don't know. He's not, he's, so, you know, and later on, we had a good relationship because of that. But that's also a very important thing that when you are interviewing, that you also evaluate the character of your hiring manager and see, okay, when I can, am I figuring him out also, him or her out? So it's a very much, and I didn't do that at all when I was a young person. Of course, I was so scared. It was like going to a viva, the professors are sitting there, I'm like looking down, you know, ashamed of myself, and they're asking me questions. Can you, do you know how to do C? Yes, sir, I do. But by the way, of course, it's always true. There was this time in which I was very, very young. So the first time I ever appeared for an interview was when I was in college third year. This was at the height of the dot-com boom, where companies would come to hire students in the third year in the other university. So they asked me a question, and I was, of course, I was very, very young then. And very young, as you are nowadays, you know, you're a little arrogant, and you also don't know the worth of a job. So I was studying for my GRE exams. I wasn't serious about getting a job, but I still wanted a job because if I don't get a job, then all my friends will get a job and I'll feel bad. So I'll first interview, first company which came, I went and I, you know, went and appeared. Okay. It was IBM in those days. So I went and they asked me this question. They asked me, what programming languages do you know? So I said, I know only C. I said C, COBOL, Fortran, whatever in those days. And I told them. And then this person said, you are a computer science student and you don't know Java. I didn't know Java. I didn't know C++ either. This was again 1998. It was in my third year. I said, no, I don't. And then he said something like, aren't you ashamed? For this was India in those days. So I said, no, I'm not. Why should I be ashamed? And then I said, if you want somebody who knows Java, why don't you go and hire in AppTech? You've come here to Jadavpur University at computer science batch, not to find people who know languages, but who know the principle of programming languages. Yes, I know that. So if you want people who know this language, that language, you're in the wrong place. I said that, I got the job. I was the first person on that list.
Wow.
For the job. Yes. I obviously didn't. To be honest, this was the totally wrong answer to give. It was, you know, as a 45-year-old man, looking back at my 20-year-old self, I would say this was a terrible answer to give to a job interviewer. But this was me at 20. I didn't care for the job. I knew I wouldn't be taking the job. And it was 10 o'clock or 10:30 at night when this interview happened, by the way. Because the campus was going on, there were so many candidates to interview. I was sweating. It was hot. We had given our final semester. I was at the end of my tether at that point of time. And so part of it was I was in that emotional state where I just basically lashed out at that guy. But he liked it. He liked the answer. I think he felt that, you know, of course, what I was saying wasn't wrong again, but you know, the interview is not a place for you to establish your, you know, it's not a winning a Twitter argument here. Okay. It's this is not that place. So you might have a great return for your hiring manager, you know, but don't do it. Don't do what I did. But it, you know, luckily it worked out for me at that point of time. But that also is perhaps a reflection of the pre.com era days where even the guy who gave that answer would get a job. And where in TCS it was that, you know, trespassers will be absorbed. So maybe that's more a reflection of those days rather than of, you know, particularly the hiring manager, even after that answer, they wanted me still. That's about it. Anything you want to add, Vikram, do a lot of interviews?
No, you've pretty much covered it all, and I think we are pretty much done.
Okay.
I think that's the podcast for today. And if you are in the job market, dear listener, and wishing you the very best of luck, it's a very tough time. So
very tough time. And again, it's because of perhaps video interviews and stuff, the traditional way of doing interviews is gone now, right? So it is going to be a learning curve for both hiring managers as well as interviewees. And when I see, you know, I log into LinkedIn and I see these, and all of us see this, you know, so many status updates of people saying, you know, I've lost my job at Uber, right? I'm looking for an opportunity. It's just so depressing. It really upsets me to see this. You see so many, you know, some of these guys are so awesome, you know, that, you know, of course, this guy is like, Jesus Christ, man, this guy is, you know, the people will be lining up outside his door given his qualifications for him. But, you know, even he's saying, I've lost my job, I'm looking for a job. And there's, I think, 354 comments, people saying, yes, please, please, yes, please. So, you know, I see that and it's just terrible. I've never seen this in my lifetime. And of course, I mean, .com bust and all of these things happened, but there was no LinkedIn in those days and I was a struggling student myself. So perhaps that was the case then too, but just to see this and I think to myself, man, you know, I hope that there's some, if there's any way that, you know, anything that I said today helps anybody out, that would be, that would, you know, that would be such a validation of this episode, and I would be so glad. And if, again, if any of you listeners have any questions that they want to ask me, you know, kind of follow up on this, please feel free to write in. I would love to answer any follow-on questions that you have on this topic. And it's really a topic which I actually love, because, you know, as a writer myself, I just love the dynamics of an interview. I just, you know, the what goes on. It's so almost in so cinematic in many ways. If you look at it from a very disinterested point of view, you know, you go there, you know, you have a lot in, you will interview it, and that's your future. There might be a dream job. You have like an hour, you have, you know, 70 minute hai tumhare paas kind of stuff going on with you. And you have to, you know, walk into a place where they're strangers. Some people might not like you because they want another candidate. Some people might not like, you know, where the university you come from. You know, they might think that it's not a great place. Whatever it is, you know, some people already, they already have history with you. Nobody's thinking positively about you. And you have to convince everybody that. So there's a lot of drama going on there. As an author and somebody who loves cinema, I can see that drama there. And again, there are good ways of getting through it, and there are not so good ways of getting through it. And I hope that I was able to shed some light on the good ways of getting through it enough. You know, one, again, final concluding thoughts is the question, the technical interview question. If you don't know the answer, that's not the end of the interview. Okay, that might just be the beginning of the interview. It's actually far better that you don't know the answer in many ways than if you know the answer and if you say what it is, because then you basically don't, you take away that knowing phase about you away from the hiring manager. And that might not always 100% work in your favor in many cases.